Welcome to Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights, a podcast by coaches for coaches. Our guests share their hard-won wisdom to help you grow your coaching business and create a life of success. So get ready to unlock the blueprints to your success. Welcome everyone to today's episode. I am thrilled to have you here. And I'm also thrilled to have Amy Kemp from Amy Kemp Inc. She is a coach. She coaches people on how to change their thought habits. So I'm excited to learn more about that. So welcome to the show, Amy. It's lovely to have you here.
Oh, I can't wait. Very excited.
Good stuff. So let's start with your journey, your story. Like, how did you become a coach who helps people change their thought habits?
Yeah, totally by accident. Don't you find the best places you land? Sometimes you get there and think, how did I get here? It's so wild. Pretty quick version. My very first professional foray was as a high school English teacher, which I loved, and coach. I thought that I was going to teach in college. I really love the words in the books. And all of those things. That being said, I also found that I really enjoy people and that I have a knack for growing businesses. And so wound up working in sales and then grew a business over 20 years in sales leadership, where I was developing people who were selling products. And through that work, I worked with a coach who used an assessment tool called the Habit Finder. It is a very unique, not very well-known tool that measures your subconscious habits of thinking, meaning your risk of falling into certain patterns of thinking. The work I did with this coach was transformational and really tripled the size of my business. And then this coach worked with a lot of people within my organization. And so we had a really close relationship. Kind of fast forward, in my personal life, I found myself about 9 years ago having many conversations with women who were very successful in their lives and careers, who were experiencing the same things: isolation, exhaustion, overwhelm, overworking, hyperfunctioning, just all of these same patterns. I kept thinking if I could get these women together, something really cool could happen. That if they knew one another, you know, there could be something really meaningful. I was in Salt Lake City speaking at an event. I always had stayed in touch with this coach that I had worked with. So we met for dinner while I was out there just to catch up. I told him I'm having all these conversations. And he said, well, we're starting training for people to use the Habit Finder on Monday. This was a Thursday. And when I tell you, like, I had never thought of it. I wasn't like planning to do that, but I thought, oh, it was so out there. And so yet it made perfect sense to me. And so I went through the extensive certification and thought I'd just do a couple groups on the side, and it's grown into a business over the last 9 years.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Habit Finder tool?
Yeah. It's very different from a lot of assessment tools that are exceptionally valuable. It's just different. So you have to kind of keep it in its own bucket. What it's measuring when you look at the measurements, and you can take it for free on my website. It's not a tool you have to pay to take, which is kind of a benefit. So the tool measures risk of your brain following certain patterns of thinking. So imagine like the children's game, Chutes and Ladders. You land on the square, you're going to go down the slide. Our brains kind of function that way too. You know, something happens that triggers a survival response in our subconscious mind, we're going to go down that path of thinking, because that path is what has allowed us to survive for our entire lives. And so I'll give you an example of a conversation I had this week with a potential client who essentially raised herself, we'll say, right? Just grew up in a home where, you know, she was living independently at a very young age. She had to take care of things that she was way too young to be taking care of. Really just was her survival instinct was to be hyperproductive, very competent, never show weakness, no time for feeling. You just work hard, you get the thing done, right? Well, it served her really well. She ends up being a leader everywhere she works. The problem is, when those are your survival mechanisms, your response to anything is, I'm going to work harder, I'm going to perform, I'm going to be perfect, I'm going to, and she's completely exhausted and burned out. Because when you employ a survival mechanism past the point of needing it, it becomes detrimental and damaging. But all of this is happening at a subconscious level. She's not thinking, oh, this is how I survive, so I'm going to do this. It's just happening. So
Yeah, that's
that's
because she doesn't have any time for that. She's so worried and you know, so climbing that ladder that she don't have time to think and look big picture.
Yeah, and it works really well in a lot of like corporate America, in a lot of business settings. You get great outcomes for a time, but you get to a certain point where you may want more impact income or influence, but you don't have any more to give. There's no more time. You don't have any more energy. You can't give anymore. And then what? Or you come to the point where your body starts breaking down, or at least giving you red flags that it's breaking down, or you just can no longer muster up the energy you once had. You know, maybe you're getting a little bit older, or maybe you're in a different season where you now have kids also, where then you go home and it's exhausting. And so you don't have the energy you once had to take care of everything. So
I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who are saying, I can totally relate to that. Because you don't necessarily have to have her past, but if that's kind of the track that you're on, it is exhausting once you and then I also think about, you know, well, what about if that when that person retires? Like, are they actually gonna get to relax, or are they gonna still go, 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 go?
The other thing is, if you're planting all of your seeds in the garden of work, what happens when work is done, or when it's time to transition out of that, or when you want to, you don't even have anything to go home to that feels fun or engaging or life-giving. So there's some challenges there too as people transition. I definitely do know that there's a piece of this that happens though at such a deep level that it, so me saying to her, well, stop working so much. Well, that's not going to work because one, it's just screaming danger to her subconscious mind. If the way you've survived is by hyperfunctioning and someone says, stop doing that, you know, you're not going to be able to override it.
Yeah, my husband says, it's like telling somebody who has depression, cheer up.
Oh,
You
that's a great example. Yes.
know? Yeah, it's not as simple as that. There's way too much going on. It sounds like a great tool, though. I'm excited to give it a try, to check it out. So I'm assuming you work with older is probably the wrong word. People who have been, you know, at work for a while, are high achievers. Maybe they're in corporate, maybe they run their own business. Is that
Sure.
correct?
They're a little bit down the road. That's how I describe it. Not all the
Oh.
way down the road, but like a little bit. They've traveled some and they've gotten somewhere. So I tend to work with a lot of people in a sales capacity who can increase their income by increasing, you know, what they're producing. I'll work with people in industries like financial advisors who kind of the same. That's a client acquisition type of a business. It's a sales interaction, right, at the outset. But also I work with leaders in government, in nonprofit, in corporate settings, or business owners. I think the connecting tissue that I see, one, most of them are women. That's one similarity. But two, while they don't always see it, they are leaders. This is crazy and tragic. But originally, all of the marketing for my business was geared toward female leaders. And what I found is, so many women were self-selecting out because they did not see themselves as leaders, that leaders that we had to change the entire marketing of my business. Now, what happens is that it attracts leaders anyhow, and they end, you know, but it's tragic to me that we don't think of ourselves as leaders when we're impacting and influencing people so much.
That's so true. That's so true. And it's so interesting about marketing. It talks to, you know, how you really need to know your audience and you need to talk to them and you need to hear, you know, what they're saying and what they identify with. Because you just picked a big one that they don't.
Yes. Or this is something I've been writing about and thinking about a lot recently, is that a lot of my clients lead differently. They're very collaborative, they're very relational, they're very much reading the room, they're building relationships with people outside of the meeting, they're listening a lot. They may not be the loudest person in the meeting, at the board table, at the whatever. And so they don't think they're leaders. They think leadership is dominant, take charge, cast vision, have a microphone in hand, you know, be out in front. And not that they can't do that, but it's not their go-to form of influence. And so they are not framing themselves as leaders, not going for that next level of promotion because they think, well, I'm not like that. I just had this conversation 3 times last week where I said, please don't be that. We've already got that covered. Like, there's
Plenty of those.
plenty. We've got those in droves. It's okay. What we need is something different, something unique. We need what you're bringing at that table also. We also need the person who's saying, I'm not going to work 14 hours a day. I'm not going to do that just because I have VP in front of my name. I'm going to create a different example for people to follow where I'm honoring my life outside of work and I'm showing up like a beast when I'm working. Like I'm really providing great value, but I'm going to provide an example that says you don't have to sacrifice your entire life to do this. And let's create a path for people who want that to see and say, oh, I could do that. I don't know if I could be that, but I could do that. Let's have more of that at those tables of
Yeah,
influence.
I love that. So yeah, I love that you're doing this and helping people who don't recognize their strengths and that, you know, they are leaders in positions that aren't necessarily the norm, thought of the norm as leaders. So tell us a little bit about maybe some clients that you've worked with. Obviously, we don't need names, but you know, kind of where they were when they came to you and then where they were when they left coaching with you.
This is so crazy. I have so many. I love this question. I'll talk about one that I just had a conversation with, and I'm going to kind of stick with this theme of leading differently because that's how I would describe her. When I met her, she was leading. She didn't know it. She had basically transformed an entire department in her place of work that was way underperforming. And now it is kind of leading. I would say within the context of that organization, leading the way and driving most of the growth that's happening. That being said, she has been told throughout her career that she needs to be tougher, she needs to be less emotional, she needs to be more take charge than what she is. But she's leading, interestingly, she's leading Gen Z millennials. And even like the tail end of Gen Y people, very well. They don't want the take charge leader. And they also want relationship. They want their leader to know them. They want to be seen in their place of work. And she's providing all of that, right? Here's where the growth happened in her. It wasn't in the way she was leading or working. She's doing that amazingly well. It was in her understanding of her value. And her willingness to pursue the next level of leadership. One, she doesn't want to leave her people to go to that next level, even though she's more than prepared for it, right? But she doesn't want to leave her people because she loves them so much and she's built this really strong team and feels very like connected to them. And so we've been talking about you're going to create that in the new place you go. But by staying where you are just because you like it and it's safe and you know it, right? But here's the other interesting thing. She was sort of excluding herself from some of those higher level roles. One reason was just because she felt like the size of her body wasn't the same as everyone else's. And if she couldn't get that under control, then she probably couldn't handle the responsibility of leading at that higher level. Or because she's doing it so differently than all the people who are currently at the table. And she doesn't want to become like those people. She doesn't even know how to, you know? So a lot of our work has been you are rare and there is value in all rarity. Therefore, you are valuable. Instead of like becoming the clone of what has been promoted before, let's stay with who you are that's working so well. Let's stay within your unique genius. But more than that, let's own your worthiness just as you are. No change needed. Like just own it and be it and step into that place knowing that it's all you need, right?
I love that. I love that because she was obviously getting the best out of the people in her team. So she knew how to help them, probably in a gentle way, it sounds like, become who their best version of themselves. So I hope that she obviously does recognize that now. And I love that. I love that you talked about understanding your value. There's a lot of, like, you know, you said you work mostly with women. It doesn't surprise me because, you know, they don't always see their value, and they, the things that they're really good at, they think, well, everybody's good at that. You know, that's not unique to me. That's just, you know, that comes easy for everyone, when we have to realize that's not actually the case.
It's the question in chapter two of my book. I ask the question, what do you do that feels so easy to you, but astonishes everyone else? That's your natural genius. Yes. And her, and hers is definitely team building, developing people, relationships, empathy, right? But to her, that feels so easy. And it's not seen as like these leadership characteristics. I disagree, but yeah.
Not traditional leadership characteristics. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so interesting too, because we carry so much of this negativity in our head. You know, it's like, oh, but I did, this was really good. Yeah, but they did it better. And, you know, you could have done it differently this time, and they don't see the value in that. Just that repeating negativity. So I would assume that some of what you do is help them stop that.
Also just detaching all of these conditions from our worthiness and readiness. You know, what does the size of your body have to do with being able to lead people? Like zero, right? There are leaders of all shapes and sizes and ages and backgrounds and genders and ethnicities, and they're leading. So clearly there's not any connection that allows you to lead better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's her own, was her own belief.
Yes. And just detaching that of like, I am, therefore I am worthy. I am, therefore I am valuable. Period. The end. Not because I produce a certain outcome, not because I perform a certain way, not because I lead a certain size team or make a certain amount of money. When you own that and it's safe, you're safe in that, then you can go out and perform free from like any risk to your value. And that's when you get your very best performance.
Oh, I love that. This is so great. So tell us a little bit about your books. Is some of this in your book to help people kind of do it themselves, if you will?
Yeah. So it sure is. I'll tell you who I wrote the book for, because that's really important to me. The reader I wrote the book for is a woman who is ambitious. She would like to have more influence, more income, more impact in the world, but without more work. She's capped out and can't work any more hours, or just doesn't want to. You know, I don't want to work harder to get more. And so what do you do then? And the core message of the book is that you can't outwork your thought habits. Because for most of my people, if you could, they already would have. Their problem is not work ethic.
Can't outwork your thought habits. I love that. That makes so much sense. And it is, it's a habit. It's like, someone described it as, you know, how like when water runs downhill, and as it keeps running and running, this crevice just keeps getting deeper and deeper. And it's a matter of, you know, how do you kind of close that up and make it go in a different way?
Yeah. And I think of it, so the habit finder measures risk. So if you think about like TSA, when you get at the airport, when there's a high risk of a terror threat or whatever, what do? They slow down. They become more aware of what's happening, right? Just more observant, more curious, more paying attention. They enlist the help of other people. So you bring in more staff, you have more people there watching, you know, doing different roles. And then you just really are more conscientious. So the same thing is true when you know you have high risk of a habit of thinking. What do? You slow down and you pay attention and you observe what's happening and you say, that's funny. I'm wanting to have this reaction. I'm aware that that's happening because it's helped me survive for a really long time. I'll talk to someone about it to like really help me reframe or rethink the situation, or maybe they even see something I don't. And so that's the same thing. It's not a fast, this is not a fixing, right? This is just an unpeeling, like a new level of awareness. And it's a very gentle, compassionate process. It's not like a checklist that we're attacking. So.
I love that. Slow down, pay attention, and become aware of what you're thinking and feeling. And that's funny you say that, because sometimes I will find myself all clenched up physically, because I've got something that's driving me nuts, and I don't recognize that I'm physically all tensed up until I finally stop and say, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, breathe." Breathing is important. So I know that there are people, Amy, who are listening to this saying, "Oh my gosh, I need her book." Where can they find your book?
Absolutely. You can get the paperback or Kindle or Audible versions anywhere you purchase books. So Amazon, Barnes and Noble, you can find them on bookshop.org if you like to shop locally or at an independent bookstore also. There's also a trove of fun resources on my website under books. So it's amykemp.com. I did a really fun sort of Oprah style, the first 8 women who read the book. I had them over for lunch and we sat in my living room and recorded our conversation around the book. So there's just some fun resources like that that you can dig into on the website also. But it is audible. People often ask if it's my voice. It is my voice. So I read the book. So you can listen to it in my voice also.
That's good stuff. I love Audible. I'm on there all the time. So, what is the specifically the best way for them to reach out to you if they want to learn more about what you do and how you do it and possibly hire you for that?
Yeah, so my website for sure. So amykemp.com, AmyKemp.com. I would invite you right on the homepage. It says take the free habit finder assessment. So you can take that, you get the results right away to your email. And you can send me a message through the website as well if you have something specific. But I would invite you to follow me on social media. Instagram is Amy Kemp Inc., and that's probably my most fun place where you can find me. So.
I love that. I love the work that you're doing in this world, Amy. So thank you. Thank you for helping the people who need it.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm going to ask you one last question. If you could provide one tip to make the world a better place, what would that be?
Never apologize or feel guilty about spending a portion of your time, energy, and resources on growing yourself. It is the greatest gift you can give to the people you love and lead. It is a non-negotiable that there's a percentage of your time, energy, and money that is invested in you.
Love that. And it doesn't matter how old you are, or how young you are, or what you do for a living, right?
Not at all.
That's so great. What a great way to end this. So, Amy, thank you so much for being my guest today. This has been inspiring and fun, and I look forward to getting your book.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us today on Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights. We hope you're leaving this episode with inspiration to take your coaching business and your life to the next level. If you found value in this episode, we would love it if you would subscribe and share it with someone else who you think might benefit from hearing it. Thanks, and we'll see you in the next episode.